You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where there may be no such thing as a free lunch, but there is a government-subsidized one. Recently, I posted an article analyzing Taking Back Sunday's album, Tell All Your Friends, through the lens of male disposability, a concept that should, by all understandings of the word, be controversial. However, upon hearing it, I had no such reaction that controversy elicits. The idea just fit nicely into the overall puzzle of how I understand the world. Did it change some things drastically? Yes. Mainly how I understand the way genders interact. Did it change a lot? No. Maybe that means I'm crazy. Or the world is. Now that's something to tell all your friends about. Joining me this week, via Skype, from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. How are you, Daniel?
I am eagerly counting down the seconds until April 24th, when I can watch people buy a watch.
You're referring, of course, to the Apple Watch? Was that just announced?
No. I meant literally a watch. What was this Apple thing you're speaking of? Is it, do you eat this watch with caramel?
Yeah, after you eat your Apple phone, yes, you eat the Apple Watch.
You have to bob for it.
Bob for watch. Oh. Of course I'm talking about the Apple Watch. I watched all of Apple's product announcement today, which if you're listening to this is probably yesterday. For the most part, I like it, and then they get to the watch part, and I'm just like, turn the volume down, I don't care. Am I the only one? I don't want to wear a watch. I stopped wearing a watch because of Apple.
Well, right, now you're going to start wearing it again because of Apple, because I know I just do whatever Apple tells me to.
Well, right, I know. But I just have no interest. The watch does everything my phone does, but on a smaller screen. They're just convincing me now to buy a bigger screen phone. Mixed messages, Apple.
Also joining us today, via Skype, from the beach that is long, the replacement gay, William Green. How are you, William?
Pretty good. I took an extra dose of gay today, just so I could fill in for Elliot. He makes this show. He checks all the facts. He's got all the good opinions, so I'm going to try my hardest.
How did you take that dose? Was it? Do I have to finish that joke?
I don't think you have to.
Everyone knows how he took that. Elliot sort of acts as the ombudsman in a certain sense, at least for our heterosexuality.
Yeah, someone has to check your white heterosexual privilege.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we needed you to fill the quota, otherwise the podcast would have been canceled.
We can't get past the censors. Yeah, the net neutrality censors won't let it out.
Yeah, that E in Apple just stands for equality. So we have to have a gay.
That's what the Apple Watch does. It makes sure you have enough gays, right, Tim Cook?
Oh,
conspiracy.
We see it unravel before our very eyes.
All right.
Whose eyes would you see it unravel before if it wasn't your very eyes? I've never.
Well, that's just a saying to emphasize the fact that you actually witnessed it.
It's not like I see it unraveling before your very eyes. That doesn't work that way.
You're looking too much into this, man.
All right. Fuck Apple.
Here in the midside, we always aim for the moon. It's the news with Daniel T. Richards.
The big geeky libertarian news this week is that X-Men director Bryan Singer has been hired to direct an adaptation of Robert Heinlein's The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. But as I pronounce his name, I'm not sure if it's Robert Heinlein or Robert something else.
I've always said Heinlein.
I've never said it out loud. It's interesting. Anyway, The Guardian reports, and you know it's from The Guardian, from this first sentence, Bryan Singer is to adapt Robert Heinlein's classic right-wing libertarian science fiction novel, Mistress, according to Hollywood Reporter. The X-Men director will work with 20th Century Fox.
Bryan Singer is to direct jelly sandwich. Like, the two opposite things.
I know. It's a crazy right-wing libertarian science fiction novel.
Wait, how come they had to use both those qualifiers for the author, but not for Fox News? Maybe they got it confused. They put one on the book and they forgot to, you know, put the right wing in front of Fox News. Maybe the editor just got confused there.
No, it's 20th Century Fox, the production company, not Fox News.
Oh, well, you know, Fox, they're all the same, right? It's
right.
All the same.
I mean, look how badly the media has jammed that into our heads. I say the word Fox, even in the context of 20th Century Fox, and William goes, Fox
It must be Fox News.
News. Right
yeah.
wing,
fair
propaganda.
And balanced right wing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
That's
Triggers,
just because
man.
You guys are all just right wing libertarians.
Triggers, man. Anyway.
Stop using my trigger word.
Gay.
Heinlein's 1966 Nebula award-winning book has been called one of the three or four most influential libertarian novels of the last century. It centers on a lunar colony with Old West overtones, which decides to fight for independence from Earth with the help of its protector, a newly sentient supercomputer named Mike.
I have a question.
All right.
So if this is in the top three or four libertarian sci-fi books, is it the number one right-wing libertarian sci-fi book? This is what I want to know.
It probably is in a category all by itself. Yes.
Interesting.
It's that good. It's that good.
So
have you read this?
Has anyone read this? I'm really into sci-fi and I've never read this book.
Oh really? I've read this book. It is definitely my favorite Robert Heinlein novel. It is,
I'll,
it is
I'll
quite
to add to
good.
My list.
After you get to the first 20 pages going, what the, who, how is he writing this? Because he writes it in a dialect, which is like a moon dialect, apparently. And it's very hard to get through the first 20 pages. But once you actually figure out and learn this brand new language, it's very good. A couple things about it. So they do sort of give you the synopsis here, but really what it is the moon is sort of used as a penal colony and they just send
That,
All
William,
the...
that means people who are punished, criminals.
Penal. Oh.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no,
not, a gay
not
colony.
That kind of novel.
It's not a gay colony, okay.
No. Not that kind of novel. and basically what happens over hundreds
that,
of years
that
is...
That novel is called The Poon is a Harsh Mistress.
Oh my god.
And now we know, now... now...
And after hundreds of years of no guards, they basically develop their own society and their way of doing things, and eventually they become really productive, and the Earth is like, hey, wait a minute, we want in on that action. And they're like, fuck you.
So what you're saying is the moon is basically Australia?
Yes. A lot like that.
Interesting.
And Mike, the supercomputer, is very funny. He's trying to learn humor throughout the novel, and one of the earlier jokes that he tells is... what is the difference between goldfish and lasers? Lasers can't blink. That's about as funny as it is in the novel as well. But the point is he's learning humor. Which is, so a couple things. Love the book. Love the director, other than the whole, you know, rape thing.
Alleged.
Thank you. But
Aaron
the
Hernandez
last-
wait,
is
wait,
alleged
wait.
Serial killer.
What am I waiting on?
Bryan Singer allegedly raped the moon? Like, what's going on?
Well, somebody's
Singer
moon because he's gay.
Allegedly raped like a 16-year-old in a hot tub at a party? Something
oh,
like that.
Oh, man.
There's details. It's messy. I mean, messier than anal sex in a hot tub.
Yeah.
So, okay, aside from all of that, let's assume he's innocent and everything goes well. He's the director of X-Men, yada, yada, yada. The last time Hollywood tried to adapt a Robert Heinlein book, anyone know what it was?
I do. Is it Starship Troopers?
It was, in fact, Starship Troopers, yes. And the book, Starship Troopers, which I read well after seeing the incredibly entertaining train wreck that was the movie Starship Troopers, is way fucking different.
The trilogy Starship Troopers, you mean?
I'm sorry, did you say trilogy?
Yeah,
as
they
in
have
there
like two
more
direct,
than one?
Yeah, there's like two direct-to-video sequels.
Yeah.
Direct-to-video is an obsolete term, isn't it?
I think it's anachronistic now, yeah.
Interesting. So basically, they butchered that movie because the guy who directed it, Paul Verhoeven, is that how you pronounce his name? Verhoeven? I have no idea. He did not like that Heinlein was a quote unquote, you know, patriotic right wing nut job. And so he wanted to do a movie that would subvert what he saw as Heinlein's philosophy.
So he purposely fucked
with the movie.
Before you go there where you're going, I mean, we did applaud Snyder for doing that to Moore with Watchmen.
Yeah, but do you honestly think there's a comparison between the artistic product of Watchmen and Starship Troopers the movie?
It had Neil Patrick Harris.
It's one step above Super Troopers the movie. I mean, it's not good.
I think that's generous. It might be one step below it.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Okay, no. I agree with what you're saying. And I've also read the book, but this is my question about the book.
Which book?
Not the Starship Troopers one. The Moon is a Harsh Mistress.
Okay.
So this is my question about it.
Okay.
I'm gonna ask that question that everyone asks about a book. Is it unfilmable?
Is it unfilmable?
Yeah.
Yes, it's
you get a mumble in the middle there.
It's mutt like Atlas Shrugged, what I was gonna say. It's unfilmable. there are a couple things. I think it's filmable, but you really have to deal with the culture aspect of it. So you have to be able to do a little bit of a longer movie so you can establish people into the world of the moon. Because that's the entire book. The entire book is explaining what this universe looks like. Heinlein's entire point in writing was to explain what a libertarian culture would look like using these science fiction tropes. So if they decide to just say, no, fuck all that, we're gonna show the moon shooting shit at Earth, then it's gonna be a terrible movie.
Well, I can see that being a problem where they start out with a lot of exposition where they're like, before the moon was a penal colony, it was peaceful. Then we started sending the criminals there. And then rather than establishing the world and as it is, they're just going to, you know, do a lot of exposition and opening narration to establish all of that. I could see them going in that direction.
I can see them going in this direction. You know, I'm totally against this exposition nonsense that we do in movies now. But you know who the writer is? The writer is the guy who wrote The Green Lantern, which was basically an opening scene of 40 minutes of exposition.
Right, which is one of the major problems with that movie.
Right.
Do you think that they'll stylize the dialogue like in the book? Do you think that'll something that can transfer?
That would be really hard. I think people will be sitting in the movie going, I don't know what I'm doing here. I need subtitles.
I think that people are going to be sitting there in the theater doing that anyway. So
yeah, I think most people usually just.
My fear with this is it's just going to end up like the Ender's Game adaptation, where there's potential there, but you need someone to be really creative with it, and they're not, so it just kind of falls flat.
Well, and I haven't seen a ton of good examples of people handling framing stories, and I don't know if that. I'm assuming there's a lot of framing stories in sci-fi in general, and in fantasy there is too. There's not a lot of good examples of people translating that to the big screen or to television well, you know? Like you get in Game of Thrones, like for example, you get like tossed around between different storylines. You never, you know, in a book, the framing story, you can, if you get lost, it's a little bit more like you can kind of go back to that, you know, three chapters ago and refresh yourself. But when you're in that, you know, hour and a half window of concentration, you don't get you can quickly overload people's ability to handle multiple storylines.
Blow their crow!
Exactly.
To use a phrase. So, that's insane. But something that's even more insane is the daily costs. If anyone's unfamiliar, the daily costs is probably the most well-read leftist blog online. It's not very mainstream in the sense that you're not going to see it on the news a lot, but it is pretty widely read. Anyway, they recently published a story that, according to The Blaze, some people are calling Beyond Unreal, which I believe is real. Anyway, the title on the story, well, the headline for the story is, ISIS may have roots in climate change. I'm going to say that one more time. ISIS, the Islamic terrorist group, may have roots in climate change.
Well, I mean, global warming is getting rid of all the ISIS, right?
No. Stretching this week, Justin.
Yes.
This is not the pun podcast.
I would just check the title to make sure, and that's true. This is not the pun podcast.
Absolutely is not. So according to the article, a drought in Syria, some blame on man-made global warming, partially destabilizes the region, creating a power vacuum that has led to the rise of the Islamic State.
So a power vacuum causes ISIS.
It's Oryk's fault.
Yeah, what's that fucking guy's name? That guy, the inventor dude, Dyson? Blame that guy.
Well, let's concretize this a little bit. We could blame any temperature change in any, either direction, because it's, you know, climate change, not global warming, on bringing ISIS to the forefront in Syria. That's really what it comes down to. So in other words, like Hurricane Katrina made me do it. Like, is that sort of the excuse we're going out here? The weather made me do it?
Well, that's the excuse for the Saints winning the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Tough if you're in California. It's a hard one to get away with. Well, I raped you yesterday because it was too cold. Oh, wait.
Well, if it's below 72 degrees, you know, there is panic in the street in Cali.
Yeah, you just got to wait until there's water falling from the sky in California.
Then you
can do whatever you want.
It's true. I'm sorry I had to murder these 76 school children, but it rained yesterday.
Right, and people would be oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, totally. Certainly, if you are driving, it is in a completely acceptable excuse to slam on your brakes as hard as possible to observe the water falling from the sky.
Well, extrapolating here, you know, we've been in drought in California for a little while. Where did ISIS already occur here? Did we already have an ISIS thing? Like, is there cells here already because of the...
Islamic terrorism?
Have you been to the Irvine Spectrum around the time it closes on a Saturday night?
No, I have not.
Is there a lot of beheading going on?
There could be. I leave because I get scared.
A lot of stoning people in the streets. I mean, it is quasi set up to look like a bazaar, right? Like, they have some of the hanging carpet things that are mildly offensive. The weird kind of arch shapes that are up to a point that are quasi-Russian / quasi-Middle Eastern.
I was making a joke about the type of people who tend to come in at that time when it doesn't make any sense because it's when it's closing. And then they all just hang out there after it's closed.
What do they do?
I don't know. I leave.
Bring your iPhone next time. Investigative journalism. Jesus.
But no, about this story, right? This is one of those times where this is naturalism sneaking into real life. And I don't mean it's actually literally naturalism. So everyone who's going to get on my case about trying to apply a stylistic interpretation to real life, get off of it.
But what all one of you.
Yeah. What they're basically saying here is it's determinism. I can't think of the specific type of determinism, but based upon what happened around them, they were going to become terrorists. It completely takes human choice out of the matter. Because drought, terrorism. Like, there's like 8 leaps of logic in there, and it's all assuming determinism.
It is true. It's quite a funny argument. But from the daily costs, really not that far out.
Well, you can't take anything like this seriously. I mean, I remember this from like 5 or 6 years ago, and Daniel, you probably remember too. There's this website that just keeps all of these conflicting claims. I mean, just in general, like, you basically, it's any claim you can think of, any arbitrary claim is immediately blamed on climate change. And it's things that are completely, you know, rising sea levels, falling sea levels, you know, more rain, less rain, stronger winds, less winds. You know, it's completely contradictory. Like, it's just everything, you know, like it's just the thing that's in every news story.
So when I was working with some objectivists, we actually, anytime anything bad happened, so for instance, walk around the corner and stub your toe, we'd scream, fucking climate change. Or like you drop a glass and it shatters on the ground. Jesus, climate change. Became an excuse, really. That's how
you're blaming Jesus for climate change? That's what
I just
heard.
That's how objectivists keep themselves entertained in an office situation, by the way. That and loud games of Scattergories. So now we'd like to turn to a new part of the news. A special report with some of our various experts in the field. Yes, we have experts in various fields. This week we turn to Katrina Lee, who examines the dark side of Instagram.
Your body is exposed, its every contour scrutinized by hundreds of eyes. Unprovoked, strangers indicate their approval. Sexual intent is evident as more and more unknown men follow you. You're nothing but an image, an object to be sexualized in ways you can neither predict nor control. 24 hours a day, the leering persists, following you wherever you go. It may sound like I just described an actress's 10-hour jaunt around oddly minority-heavy parts of New York City, but no. The horrifying kaleidoscope of male gaze that I'm talking about is Instagram, the photo-sharing app where 300 million people voluntarily offer themselves up to public ogling 70 million times every day. Which makes this gender war skeptic wonder, is there a meaningful difference between Instagram and catcalls? With 2.5 billion likes per day, what makes an Instagram like socially acceptable and a compliment on the street offensive? How do you reconcile sharing your glamour shots with 300 million people while resenting a polite good morning inspired by the same sex appeal that rakes in the likes online? By 2017, the average American woman will be more likely to be an active user of Instagram than to participate in the workforce. Already, 68% of Instagram users are female versus only 47% of workers. In fact, women outnumber men in every major social media platform but one, LinkedIn. Does this mean that men go online to seek work while women go online to seek attention? How are we to make sense of the feminist notion that catcalls are tantamount to rape, at the same time that some 200 million women use selfies to solicit likes on Instagram? It may be narcissism, but it's clearly also profitable narcissism. Can we really blame these selfie sluts when we see Edward Snowden, nerdy dreamboat that he is, dating not a fellow whistleblower, but a cam girl? When every underappreciated beta male given the chance would choose Grace Kelly over Grace Hopper? No wonder we end up with hypergamy instead of Hypatia. Millennia of men seeking beauty and women seeking resources have served us well by genetically linking beauty with brains, to the point that today a beautiful face is good for an extra 10 or so IQ points. But at the end of the day, we live, work, and love with individuals, not statistics. Men's obsession with youth and beauty, and women's obsession with being seen as youthful and beautiful, aren't doing us any favors as life expectancy approaches 100 and plentiful resources inspire us to seek long-term fulfillment in addition to survival. Both sexes are responsible for creating and sustaining a culture that sees women as human beings and men as human doings. Our most productive men trade a lifetime of hard work for a few years of access to empty sex with playmates, while construction workers holler at women on the street, and the average Joe offers instant validation to the average Jane online. Men and women devalue their achievements and themselves when they reward one sex for merely existing. We need to let go of the old ways and embrace the self-responsibility that the future demands. We need to get off of Instagram. This is Katrina Lee reminding you to protect your nuts.
Thanks, Kat. That was both riveting and revealing. What do you think of this, guys? Instagram. Catcalling?
Can I take my hands off of my nuts now?
Wait,
I'm not sure.
I think it's a requirement for the podcast that you keep them covered at all times.
I'm just trying to stay protected. For how long?
No, you pretty much need to glue them there. I'm not gonna lie. If you go outside and you're a white male, guard those testes.
So is this really, like, are people really concerned about this? Like, as far as, like, I know the answer to this. People's self-esteem really tied to, you know, how many likes they get or how many shares they get on Instagram or, you know, how many pins they get on Pinterest. You know, like, if this is the equivalent of catcalling, you know, some people like that and some people don't like that. And I know today we're not supposed to like that. You're not supposed to like being checked out in public. So,
it's a bizarre dichotomy, right? Because as someone who works in this field on a daily basis, I will tell you unequivocally that some people's self-esteem is entirely wrapped up in this. I see it all the time. But on the other hand, it's supposed to be this thing we don't take seriously. So there's a little bit of a cognitive dissonance here in people's heads, but I think if people aren't worried about this right now, and by people, that I use that term very loosely because I mean social justice warriors, this is their next front. Once they've got us, you know, fretting about everything we say or write or think, then they're going to turn to everything we click on and like and tweet and retweet.
So if I retweet something, I could be oppressing someone. If I like one of their Instagram posts,
likely oppressing someone just by asking the question. Yes.
What if I look at it but don't like it?
Well, then, you know, like, then you're turning.
Is there mandatory
gaze.
Liking?
Yeah, you're turning your male liking? Gaze onto it. So,
are we going to have net neutrality liking? Are we going to get, you know, you just post something and you get your 5 likes automatically? Will the State Department and the Department of Interior just like things randomly for any good citizen?
I think both Justin and I would very much benefit from retweet neutrality. We would. I think it would increase our net number of retweets quite a bit. But
You know, you're right, Daniel, that the social justice warriors are going to come in here eventually. But I do think Katrina has a good point here. You look at especially the women's profiles on Instagram, right? I think the most striking thing she said to me was, or the thing that struck me the most was when she talked about the percentage of users on Instagram is 67% women, and that's more women than are in the workforce. It's a higher percentage. But when you look at their profiles and you find them, they have at least, if they're marginally attractive, they have at least 500 followers, if not 1,000. And the reason I know this is browsing on Tinder and Xing everyone in their profile has their Instagram. And then you go to their Instagram and they have 500 to 1,000 followers, if not more. And it's like, how do you, random person on Tinder, random person in Orange County, have that many followers on Instagram? And the point that's being made, which I think is a good point, is these aren't your friends. You're posting these things just for random people to give you attention. And then why are random guys following these people? Don't you get bored? I mean, I followed a couple that I thought were cute, and then 2 days later I got bored because there was nothing worthwhile or what they were posting. It's like, oh, here's another picture of a pretty girl, which I can then Google a pretty girl whenever I want and Google a prettier girl whenever I want.
Like,
so
oh
what we're
God,
really getting
is an inspirational quote by Nietzsche.
What we're really getting to here is that Justin has less followers than me, because as a person with over 500 followers, I guess I don't need the follower neutrality, but
you're a pretty girl is what you're saying.
I'm a pretty, pretty princess.
You're a pretty girl.
How many Facebook friends do you have though?
I just went through a Facebook purge, so that's not a good measure.
Pre-purge anarchy. How many did you have?
Probably 500 or 600 somewhere.
Okay,
there. About the same as my Twitter.
But see, that's consistent.
Yeah.
You see? There's a difference between having around the same amount, because when I signed up for Instagram, it automatically notified my Facebook friends and people followed me. So I have about 40, 50 followers. So that makes sense. But when it gets to the point that you're not contributing anything, you're simply posting pictures and they're not even good pictures and you have that many followers, what does that say about yourself and what does it say about our culture?
It says that I'm getting catcalls, or at least more catcalls than you, Justin.
So I think to tie this a little bit into the sexist article we talked about, why are guys following all these girls on Twitter? Probably at least
Instagram,
in part,
not Twitter. We don't care what
they have
to say.
Touche, salesman. On Instagram, why are they following with Instagram? Partially because they've probably stopped pursuing them in real life, and this is just their form of getting off on it. Quite literally.
Well, the other thing that was interesting is, I mean, social media is just dominated by women. Like, that was something that, you know, is kind of a new thing for me. I mean, I guess I kind of knew that in my gut, but what was it outside of
LinkedIn?
Wait,
I'm
right?
Sorry. Did you say in your butt?
No, gut.
You have to go through the hazing, just like Elliot did. So.
Oh, geez. I just watched Neighbors. I know what that means.
Mm-hmm. Prepare for the goat.
It means more Dave Franco.
Yeah.
So a lot more
outside
women
of LinkedIn. Yeah.
A lot more women than men. So that's another interesting thing. Is it men don't like to take pictures? Like, what am I supposed to get from that?
Men like doing shit. Men don't like taking pictures. I don't know. It's not enough Asian men, right? If there are more Asian men, there'd be more pictures. Anyway, I'm tired of social media. I do social media all day. But do you know what I'm not tired of? Transgender. But apparently some woman in Midland County in some state, Michigan.
Come on now.
Was tired of transgender.
I grew up near this area, about an hour and a half away from Midland, Michigan.
According to MLive.com. What the hell is this website? Where do you get this news, Justin?
MLive.com is the main website for Michigan news, man.
Mm-hmm. So there you go. All right. Well, that's where I get this stuff.
Seems made up to me. A Midland County woman's gym membership was canceled after she refused to stop telling fellow gym members, quote, a man was using the woman's locker room. The problem was this man was a transgender person who identifies as a woman. And Planet Fitness told her that she was violating their judgment-free zone policy in complaining about this and telling other women about it, and so they canceled her membership. Mm. Is this wildly ironic that the Planet Fitness, the planet that is known for fitness and says it's a judgment-free zone, canceled her subscription because she was judging? Are they not judging?
I think it is deeply ironic, but I think in this case, it was the right thing to do. It sounded like from the article that she was basically like standing in front of like the gym somewhere telling every girl that walked by that they had let a transgender person in the locker room. So it's very disruptive at the very least.
Okay. I get that it's disruptive. And of course, as a capitalist, completely free market douche, I have no problem with Planet Fitness kicking out anyone for literally any reason. I don't care. But the cultural point here, because this person identifies as a woman, now this article makes no distinction whether they were in the, you know, pre-op, post-op, considering op,
thank you.
Special ops, whatever.
Thank you. I just wanted to stop you for a second. That was the point I was going to make. So I'm going to back you up on that in a second, but continue.
Okay. They make no mention of this, but because this person identifies as a woman, they can use the woman's dressing room. So if I walk in, me, button up shirt, khaki shorts and sandals, and go, I identify as a woman, I get to use the woman's locker room?
Yeah, I believe South Park did this, right, with Cartman?
Yeah, and that's okay? Like, that's the world we're living in where that's fine now?
Yeah, I think their policy was genuinely identify, so I don't think you would qualify. But, I mean,
but they're judging me then.
Yeah, define genuine.
Exactly.
This is the problem. Exactly. This is the problem.
They can't advocate no judgment and be making judgments. But, I mean, that's the whole point, right? You can't do things without passing judgment.
But it's not about the judgment. It's about the fact that there's no line here. This woman could have been legitimately upset that there was a man in the locker room who simply called himself transgender. Where is the line when you are no longer what your original gender was and you're now your new gender? I mean, is it really fair to call someone a pre-op transsexual? Isn't that an oxymoron?
It depends on how they're... I think it depends on how they're presenting themselves. Like, If you have a pre-op transgender who is dressing like a female, has let their hair grow out, even if they're pre-op but on hormones, they can look legitimately like a woman, right? If they're a man and transgender. And so the identifying aspect is that way. Now, if they're just a cross-dresser, if they're just dressing in female clothes and they've got the big beard and they're, you know, whatever, like that's different. That's a different case. And I, you know, if the, I mean, there are some folks dealing with, like, we don't know all of the stuff that has to do with, you know, transgender sexuality and psychology. I mean, psychology is such a messed up science right now. But, you know, I've met some folks that are post-op transgender, and they were very genuinely in the wrong sex, right? They were very genuinely in the wrong sex. And if they're going to go to the gym, they got to go somewhere, and they should go where they feel comfortable. And if it does seem weird to me, like, you do wonder how, not necessarily how, but you know, they have private, the article talked about how they had private stalls for changing and everything else. Like, if this person is, if this transgender person is closer to the pre-op stage than the post-op stage, you know what I mean? If someone else is noticed and complaining, it must be early in the transition process. But still, if that's the gym's policy to, you know, to allow it, you know, I mean, they obviously had a transgender policy, so they've thought about it and had to deal with it.
So I concede that there are deeper psychological issues here, and I don't want to dismiss those per se. But at the same time, the people who are going through this, one, are statistically a vast, vast minority. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean they should be oppressed, of course, but it means that they have to exhibit some judgment based on what the vast, vast, vast majority of people are going to be comfortable with. Right? Isn't that just dealing with reality?
So you would be comfortable with a transgender man who's identifying openly as a female. So in other words, they've got earrings on, long hair, you know, wearing female clothes, walking into the Planet Fitness male locker room and changing in their shared spaces.
This is my question to answer that question. Does he still have a penis?
Yeah. William, does he have a penis? You just asked William like he might have known.
No,
I don't know.
Like, well, he keeps a record. Like, he keeps a record.
Excuse me. Let me open the gay, transsexual, bisexual, and lesbian.
Let me open up the BLT book.
This is the point I'm making, right? Of this hypothetical. So, okay, he's on hormones, but he's still pre-op. That still represents an issue of him going into the women's locker room, even if he identifies as female and he's not attracted to women, that's still an issue.
Yeah. What's the rule of decency that we're protecting here? That's what I'm trying to understand, right?
Here, like, if yeah, this
it's
is my
not decency that's the issue.
If there's going to be a meaningful distinction or any distinction, it has to be a physical distinction. Because it can't be a mental distinction, because then I could just walk in as me and say, I am a pre-op transsexual who identifies as a woman, but who wants to look exactly like a man and have a penis. And if I was genuine about that, could they rightfully kick me out of the woman's dressing room? No, according to their policy. So if there's going to be a distinction, it has to be a physical distinction. It has to be a difference of anatomy. And look, if I was someone going through this, now, that's hard for me to imagine, but I will try my best. If I was someone going through this, I would hope that I would still have the sense of reality to know that I am a vast, vast, vast minority, and maybe I would choose not to use public locker rooms. Maybe I would choose to work out at the gym and then go home and shower.
Right, or change before you get to the gym, so you're in your workout clothes when you get there.
Right.
Yeah.
Just have some consideration of other human beings.
Right,
that's all I want.
It's not protecting a standard of dignity.
Why is it? Yeah, that's what I don't understand. That's what I don't understand by what you guys are saying, because what is this, like, this is probably because I'm just a weirdo, but, you know, as a gay person, as just a person, like, it doesn't matter to me who I'm changing in front of in the gym. Like, it didn't matter if it's a girl or a guy. Like, you know, like, it's not a – I mean, they had private booths, right, like, to change in. Like, this is what I'm not understanding. It's like, you go into a place, there's shared facilities, there's private areas to change and shower in. What part are we protecting? Why couldn't it be just unisex is what I'm trying to say, right? Like, why do we have this distinction at all? Like, what's the facts of reality to give rise to this distinction at all of why we have this, when they're all private facilities anyways. At least that's what the article said. It's not like a shared shower.
I could give you a tremendous social justice answer.
Because men are oppressive?
Right. Because the gaze upon the naked female body would be so overwhelming.
That's with a Z, not a Y-S.
Yes.
Oh, I was trying to, I was having a hard time understanding why gaze would be on the female body, but.
It would be so overwhelming and oppressive that it would necessarily have to be segregated. And I think then from the radical other side of that, which I would think that a significant number of people hold, like a more Christian or more traditional moral thing, would be like, these are private parts of you that you don't necessarily give access of people of the opposite sex to see. Now, I think that maybe culture is changing in a way that doesn't matter as much, but I would still say that it pertains for at least an enormous percent, if not like almost unanimous percent. But
right.
So from either
thing.
Side, social justice or radical conservative, you can find a legitimate reason. Find a good reason. I don't know if it's necessarily legitimate.
Right. Why is the comfort of the transgender person being privileged over the comfort of this woman? They're both just individuals. Two individuals are disagreeing. So the woman gets kicked out and the transgender person gets to stay. Why is one comfort being called legitimate and one comfort being called illegitimate? That's the problem.
And again, I'm asking from a cultural point of view. I'm not asking from a, should Planet Fitness be forced by the government to make transgender dress somewhere else? No, that's their entire business.
Right.
Whatever.
Right. And
it's a cultural question.
Right. We're asking
question. Yeah. What if it had been the other way around though? What if the clearly, let's say it's a pre-op, but hormone and so we're talking breasts, we're talking, you know, everything female except for still has the penis on, and he goes into the male locker room and causes the same controversy. Some
are
guy saying there's a transgender.
Are you pre-op if you have a fake tits?
It wouldn't be fake. If you start taking the drugs, your breasts are going to get bigger.
Oh, okay.
So in other words, they're all further along the spectrum, right? Because that's what you guys are trying to discuss, right? Is like, where is this line?
Right.
So that's what I'm trying to be the completely opposite direction now. Like, how long are they allowed in the male locker room before it's a privilege issue?
And I still stand by that if there is going to be a distinction, it has to be an anatomical distinction, and the key
so
anatomical
breasts
distinction.
Don't count,
no, because some fat men have breasts, so it doesn't count. I mean, it's just fatty tissue. But having a penis.
Well, so is a
vagina,
penis. A penis is just fatty tissue.
Yeah, there's a lot more going on there. I hate to inform you about biology.
I just want to point out you just tried to inform a gay guy about penises.
I know. I'm getting. Yeah, check your privilege, man.
I've had one my entire life.
And he's had more than one.
I've had more than one for quite a while.
All right,
Can we talk more about penises?
Oh, let's move on.
I know someone whose membership to Planet Fitness would never be canceled. Supergirl. We discuss her in TV with JML. Before we get into the Supergirl costume discussion and the show in general, Supergirl in general, I have a couple of reviews I'd like to hand down here. And I'm going to ask William and Daniel if they've seen either of these shows as I review them. So the first show I'm going to talk about, as is the theme of the episode, The Last Man on Earth. Have either of you seen The Last Man on Earth starring Will Forte?
I have only seen the previews.
I have not seen it. Yep, I've not seen it.
What are your perceptions from the previews?
Silly premise that I have no interest in.
William?
Also, there's a woman.
It looked like it would be very boring. It looked like it looks sort of like a naturalistic version of that Tom Hanks movie where he was on the island.
Well,
by
they actually address all of that in the first episode where they have him watching Castaway and he says, that's unrealistic, Tom Hanks. I'd never be friends with a beach ball. And then he becomes friends with many different sports balls. So they address that head on. And it's actually not naturalistic. It's all about the choices he's making by trying to not go insane. On Hulu, for some reason, they have two episodes together as one long episode. I only got through the first one because the first one is exactly what I just explained. It's just him, like, destroying shit because he can, because he's got nothing else going on. Like, he drives a car into another car to see it explode. He throws a bowling ball into fish tanks. It's just all that kind of stuff. And then right when he's about to commit suicide, he finds a woman. And that's the end of the episode. So I just wonder if this show is going to be, you know, escalation of every episode they find a new person. Because how are we going to watch an entire series of these two people? You couldn't even last one episode with just one person.
Yeah, I wasn't entirely thrilled with the premise of a one-man show going, you know, 13 episodes.
I don't know.
I applaud them for newness. It's not a remake, right? So maybe I will watch it just so I'm not a hypocrite. But I don't expect to enjoy it. I expect to torture myself.
It's not great. It's not awful. I mean, it's got good production value. There's some funny visual gags in it. So, you know, it's something to watch, but I just don't think it has that depth of theme, of intelligence that a good show requires.
Didn't The Twilight Zone already do this, but as a drama?
Probably.
And it was only 28 minutes?
Wasn't there a movie called I Am Legend starring Will Smith that already did this?
Premise achieved. Okay.
Now, another new Fox show. Have either of you heard of Empire?
I hear that it's all the rage.
And that's Go ahead.
I heard it's a soap opera on the evening soap opera, basically.
Yeah, and that's why I finally bit the bullet and watched the first episode, because it's doing so well in the ratings. And you know what I learned? Do you know who created this show?
Oh, God. Is it the guy who did Two and a Half Men?
No, that was... Oh. No.
Is it secretly an own show? Is it Oprah?
Oh, is it Ryan Seacrest?
All of these might be better answers than by the person it was actually created by. So it was created by Lee Daniels and Danny Strong. You may remember them as the team that brought you The Butler, that big hit movie.
Oh.
Okay.
So the basic premise of this show is there is a record label, which is sort of like, you know, Dr. Dre's label or something like that, sort of like Aftermath. And it's run by Terrence Howard, who came up as a rapper and made this awesome label, which is really expensive. But it's going to have its initial IPO. And the twist here is that Terrence Howard is now married to a new woman, but the woman who gave the original $400 investment or $400,000 investment when the label started, when they were just drug dealers, is his ex-wife, who is now getting out of prison because she was caught by the police when she was getting that initial investment by selling drugs.
Okay.
So the other factor here is that Terrence Howard is going to die in the next 3 to 5 years, you know, depending on when the show is canceled, I'm assuming. He has three sons, and he's saying, one of you is going to be my successor. But only two of them are musicians. So he's saying that one of the two musicians' sons are going to be the new head of the label eventually, the head of the company. Except one of them is gay, which he doesn't like. So the wife comes back, starts managing the gay guy's career, who he hates, and asks her at one point, how are you not ashamed of him? And then he's managing the rapper's career. And then the third son, who's older and he's educated and went to business school and he married a white woman, which they also don't like, that he married a white woman, wants to run the company. So he's trying to manipulate the whole situation so it ends up with him as the one actually running the label. He's playing between both sides.
This sounds like lame of Thrones.
it's very similar to Game of Thrones, and it suffers.
Yeah, where are the White Walkers?
It's the wife is the White Walker. But the issue here is the same thing, and that's something I wanted to ask you guys about. When you watch a show, do you have the same sort of reaction I do when there's no thematic depth to it? To me, a show just feels hollow and empty. Like they're just having conflict for conflict's sake. Like if you look at that setup, it's actually not bad, where there's two divorced parents who each pick a side and they're trying to win the label. But when there's no reason for it happening and no broader point to it, it just feels empty to me.
It's a very soap opera premise. You know, it's just, you know, it's like you said, it's conflict for conflict's sake. There's no real, it's something that could easily be done in a season or run for, you know, 10, 15 years, right? You could just keep milking that conflict forever. That's very surface conflict.
Yeah, it sounds like a very naturalistic setup. It doesn't sound like there is an integrating theme that is going to drive the decisions of characters or be explored throughout the show by different situations. It just sounds like these people hate each other. Let's watch.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is we take that as a for granted premise almost, right? That it needs an integrating theme. So I'm asking you guys, what do you think of that? Why does something need an integrating theme?
Because I live in a world where these things happen. Specifically, I live in Washington, D.C., where there is hatred for hatred's sake, or there is love for love's sake, or money for money's sake. And when I'm watching art, when I'm consuming something that is artistic, I'm not interested in watching a recreation of what goes on in the world. I'm interested in watching the stylization of some theme to some greater purpose for me. First, to learn something or to think about something in a different way or to experience something I wouldn't have experienced before. But I don't want to watch reality fiction TV.
I think that's a great answer. William, do you have any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I think it gets back to when you connect to characters, it's a very surface connection to say, oh, well, parents just hate, or I can understand a gay person being hated by their parents, right? Like that's a very surface sort of thing. But if it's not filled in with other aspects of personality and motivation, it becomes almost a trope, right? Like it's not an actual character. There's no big thing at stake. There's no big value being explored.
And that's where I think Daniel, your and William's points combined is it's not actually reflective of real life if there are no values at stake. You know, they're going to claim the value is the record label is what's at stake in Empire, but why are they pursuing the record label? Well, just because that's what they're supposed to do. And that's the thing is why do we tell stories? Well, we tell the stories to figure out how we want to pursue values, to learn about life and, as you said, Daniel, experience things we couldn't have experienced before. It's a way of opening our eyes and learning new information. And when you do a story in this way, it just becomes mindless escapism, and that's why people start decrying the movies and television as escapism.
Well, looks like I won't be watching.
Thank I wouldn't you, suggest anyone watch. I'm actually surprised that it's doing so well in the ratings, especially considering it's on Fox. But I think there's a little bit of the – I'm going to pull a Rush Limbaugh here and get kicked off of NFL Live. But
red flag.
I think there's a little bit of the media being desirous to have a hit black show on white television here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just called Empire the Donovan McNabb of TV dramas.
Well, now the net neutrality police are going to shut this podcast off for sure.
So let's talk about a white woman instead.
Yeah.
Have you guys
boring.
Seen the new Super? Well, yeah, I know. Fucking gay guy bored by a white woman. Have you guys seen the new Supergirl costume?
Unfortunately, I have.
Unfortunately?
Yes.
I thought it looked okay. I'm the worst gay when it comes to fashion, so I have to defer to someone else's judgment on this.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan. I thought we were going with a good trend with Snyder and Nolan in the sort of new look for superhero outfits that were supposed to be functional, but at the same time still cool-looking superhero.
Like that Aquaman costume?
Like the Aquaman costume, which is awesome. And this is sort of like retro 60s. Like we're going back a little bit. She looks dainty and completely unimposing.
Well, she is Supergirl.
And schoolgirlish.
She is a girl, that's the thing. They do say that in this article, right? That she's supposed to look like she's still flirty and fun. So I'm looking forward to her Instagram photos.
Oh man. Flirty and
her
fun.
Her kryptonite is selfies.
Her kryptonite is being blocked on Instagram.
Oh no, she's below 500 likes.
I mean, in a way, I think you're right, Daniel. This kind of looks like somebody just cosplaying, doesn't it?
Yeah. This is something I could see at friggin' Comic-Con. I'm so disappointed in it. Who's directing this nonsense?
I don't know, but it's on CBS, so isn't that kind of expected?
Oh, well, there you go. CBS.
So does this mean it'll be a procedural?
Oh, and then they'll have the Superboy spinoff?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Superboy, Miami.
And then
Super Minority Boy.
I was going to say Super Minority will take place in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not impressed. Learn something from Zack Snyder, people. Seriously, get on it. Copy him.
All right, let's move on. Gaming crosses with grieving next in Reddit on Reddit.
Sony stupid, Xbox lame, PC gaming all the way, EA blows, Steam rocks, God rest for my Firefox. These things are all on Reddit. Mostly pics of felines, comma, whoring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't host it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit. My brother passed away in 2013. I still visit him in Skyrim to see the last thing he saw there. I never move his character or do anything, just sit there and look at what he last saw before passing away. I miss him a lot, but wanted to share.
Well, way to bring
so
it down, Justin.
Did he pass away while playing Skyrim? Is that really the last thing he saw was...
No, if you read it, he was, if you read the story they posted here, there's a, you know, there was a long Imgur thread of like a bunch of pictures like, here's my brother. Here's where my brother went when he died. He was like with
There's
his...
more to this story?
Yeah, if you actually click the links I provided you with, you can learn things.
There are links?
Are you
provide us with something?
Are you filling Elliot's role today, doing no prep?
I read the Reddit.
I read the Reddit too. Yeah. I read the Reddit too. I guess I read the comments. I did like every good Redditor and I only read the comments. You don't read the article. What's up with the... Don't you even know how to Reddit?
Well, no, apparently I don't know how to Reddit, which doesn't surprise me, but no, I was curious about exactly what you said, William. Was the last thing he saw was Skyrim? Like, did he have a heart attack or something? But no, if you read it, he was like in a river and something happened and he got sucked under like tree roots under the water and his friends couldn't find him in time, so he drowned.
Jesus.
No, that's
horrific. This is a family podcast.
Yeah, jeez.
A trans family podcast.
Cut it the fuck out.
Drowning is my trigger. No trigger warning.
Now, here's the thing about this story. It's horrific, right? I have sympathy for that.
Yes.
But he passed away in 2013, and you're still visiting him in Skyrim? I don't know. Something seems off to me.
Something seems off, yes. But... there's one thing about this that we are going to have to confront as a culture, probably sooner rather than later, which is digital death and digital life, which is we have these huge presences now in many online spaces. And when we die, they don't just vanish. They're there. And it's kind of weird. And what do you do with that?
Who will answer my Grindr messages after I die?
Exactly. Says this guy is 10 feet away. He's always 10 feet away.
He's 6 feet. 6 feet!
Yeah, you did miss that joke, Dan, no.
I just... fuck you people. I was saying William's phone is in his home. Never mind. Okay. I'm trying to not gonna bury him with his phone. Okay. Moving on.
I'll be buried with my Apple Watch, thank you.
Well, I still think that, and this is a theory I had.
Which will still be lame.
I still think that, and this is a theory I had when cell phones first started getting popular, that I think eventually people will just be assigned a number when they're born, like their social security number, except it'll be a cell phone number, and that number will port to all of the different social medias, or maybe all the social media will be combined into one, because we know companies are trying to push for that. And then somehow the government will associate it that when you die, the number gets deleted or something. Eventually, this will be centralized and planned, won't it?
Will you stop giving the NSA ideas? Just kidding. It's, I mean, that's interesting. Did you know that Facebook recently in the settings allows you to choose a designated person to care for your account after you're dead?
Oh, that's new. I know that I have an inactive account setting on my Google account. So if I don't log in after like some number of days, then my account goes to the person I've identified. So I think for me it's my sister. But that can be a good thing and a bad thing. But you know, I feel like there's a lot of data that I have, like just like my
porn,
random pictures,
yeah,
on Picasa or like.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
porn.
Pictures or porn, all that Facebook porn, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All my Instagram photos, all my Snapchats, those all need to go somewhere, you know?
Yeah, someone needs to hold on to this shit. We're digital hoarders. So, it's interesting. I haven't filled out my profile yet, as I do not expect to be run over by a dragon or whoever that kid died.
Next Reddit. School votes for communism-themed dance, dubbed Promunism.
Some of us did find prom to be less preferable than to going to the gulag, so I think my prom might have been communist themed as well.
Dates according to their need, not according to their ability. What is a communist themed prom? Not serve food?
No, you only serve three slices of bread, and then after that, you put a big, come next week or whatever.
Everyone has to wear the same clothes.
Same, yeah. There's all only left shoes available.
Afterwards,
that's all
you all get hammered and sickled.
Wow, you were making fun of me earlier.
This is the stupidest idea I've ever heard.
Yeah. So I read something.
Something tells me that most of these people wouldn't even know what communism is. I mean, is it? Are they all going to wear Che Guevara shirts or something? Or Mao shirts?
Yeah. One sophomore at the school was not amused. I love that part of the news story, by the way.
Wait, they allow sophomores at prom? Because when I went to prom, it was juniors and seniors. You had to get invited if you were some.
Yeah.
It's a communist prom.
Yeah, it's a communist prom. Everyone gets to go.
You can go if you want.
No, I think if you're not a card-carrying communist member, you are not allowed to go.
Very interesting. Would this be acceptable if it was like a Holocaust-themed prom? Or even less specifically, a Nazi-themed prom? Would that be allowed? National Socialist Party-themed prom?
If it's a Holocaust-themed prom and you show up at the door, do they say, I'm sorry, you're not on the list?
They would have to hold it in the gymnasium so, you know, each respective side could have their shower.
Except for the transgender who would...
Wouldn't that be a time when you're like, nope, you know what? I don't need to use your community showers. I've got one at home. It's perfectly fine. It's okay to discriminate. Completely
and the
fine.
Transgender will inherit the earth.
Guys, stop giving MTV ideas for shows.
Oh, man.
We crossed so many lines today.
All right.
Yeah, bad idea.
Next Reddit. Which commercial had the opposite effect on you, making you completely avoid a product or company?
I didn't really think hard on this one, because typically I like advertisements. Typically I think, thank you for letting me know that thing exists that I may or may not need ever.
Really? Because I have a few.
All right. Well, why don't you start?
All right. How about the GoDaddy commercials? As you know, a gay man, a you know, suggestively sexual, like female commercial, like very sort of misogynistic commercial, doesn't really connect to me. And I don't think, wow, those girls, you know, like being suggestive with each other really make me trust their ability to provide web content in a safe, secure, and efficient manner. Like, doesn't really connect to me. Basically avoid your daddy.
I'm sorry, what were you saying? I was thinking about getting Hardee's. So many things I don't have to worry about as a straight man. It's funny. You people are more oppressed than I thought.
Any other ones, William? You said you had a few.
Yeah, I was going to say the Geico commercials.
Ooh,
because, again, it's, you know, it's nothing to do with the product. It's just, you know, some of them are just really random, just random things. And so I've never thought, you know, oh, this is a good insurance company. I should consider Geico.
Geico is my insurance company. So I guess the one that I have, I can think of, are the Microsoft Surface commercials, which I guess they're only targeting people who are already Microsoft Surface customers, because all the commercials are basically like, aren't Mac users retarded? Look how stupid Mac users are. Buy a Surface. Like, well, okay. Not really my thing.
So they're selling to, they're Texans selling Surfaces? I don't
know. I was going to point that out,
yes.
Too.
Rednecks. This is only rednecks with
this is his best voice ever.
Yeah. Guess of that Texas rubbed off on you.
Yeah, I'm really good at being a redneck. I sort of get that Apple kind of did it with the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC ads, but they were kind of playful. Whereas the Surface ones are basically just like, you're an idiot if you have an iPad. Why would you ever buy an iPad, you moron? Buy a Surface.
Plus the Apple commercials had Justin Long, so.
Not appealing to me. And John Hodgman. Not appealing to me. Justin?
My answer is Jack in the Box.
Oh, that's a good one.
Oh, that's a good one. I never want to eat there.
If the commercials are so incompetent that I'm like, you can't even get marketing rights, it doesn't make me think I want to get your product. Like, every time I watch a Jack in the Box commercial, I go, what was the point of that commercial? I don't understand it. How are you advertising?
I think you have to. I think it's one of those things where, like, you know, back in the day when you would give out 3D glasses and you could watch a movie, like in the old school red and green or red and blue, whatever it was, 3D glasses. I think that the equivalent of that for the Jack in Box commercial is that you have to actually be high in order to receive the messaging that is in the Jack in the Box commercial. I think that if you're actually on some sort of drug, not alcohol, it's got to be some sort of drug, then you will get the marketing and then it'll be effective.
They're exclusively for stoners. That's funny, because I thought Taco Bell had that market cornered, but I guess Jack in the Box is giving them a run for their money.
Not really in California.
There's not a lot of Taco Bell. Yeah.
Really?
No, my roommate and I were driving around and I was like, holy shit, there's a Taco Bell. Like, I hadn't seen one in so long.
I guess you do have Del Taco.
All right.
And El Pollo Loco.
Ready for the last Reddit?
Always.
Last Reddit. What TV finale was initially disappointing, but may have been genius in hindsight?
I think there's one that's clearly stands out here, but I didn't think it was disappointing at the time, but I assume culturally it was, which is House.
Yeah, right? And if you look all over the Reddit thread, everyone says that. But when I watched it the first time, I was like, that's a brilliant ending.
Yeah, I loved it. Does that mean if I watch it now, I'll hate it? Like, I don't know what the logic is here.
I don't know. Well, I'm trying to think of a show that I was disappointed in. Like, I was really disappointed in Battlestar Galactica's ending, but I don't think it was, like, even with hindsight, I'm still disappointed in the ending.
No, that gets worse with hindsight.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I only have examples like that. I don't have examples where I was disappointed in it.
No, Battlestar Galactica and Lost both get lost, both get worse with hindsight.
Yeah.
What about the show that ended with everything in a snow globe? Is that brilliant in retrospect?
In a way.
And it was kind of first.
Yeah.
It wasn't satisfying at the time, I'm sure, but what was that show? St. Elmo's Fire, or?
Yeah, I think that's it. No, that's a movie. It was St. Elsewhere.
St. Elsewhere.
St. Elsewhere. There you go.
St. Elmo's Fire.
What about,
Whatever. It's the same thing. Tell me, one listener, tell me the difference without Googling it, and I will, I'll give you a digital high five. Drew? You can. Drew. No one can.
What were other examples from the, yeah, what were other examples from the Reddit? Cause I kind of agree with House. I mean, I've only know the House ending because of, you know, all the spoilers you guys drop on the podcast every time about House. Still haven't watched the last season. Are we outside of the statute of limitations for the spoiler alert for House yet?
Yeah, absolutely.
Alright, absolutely.
I mean, I'm not Chuck, which I've never seen the ending of. True Detective, people mention.
I liked Chuck. I know a lot of people didn't like Chuck. It wasn't like high television. I don't go back and watch old episodes, but I enjoyed the ride when it was on.
So can I give my expert answer?
Yeah, sure. Of course.
So it's one of my favorite endings ever, but at first blush, it seems like it's disappointing. So this is going to be a spoiler for the series Angel, which is past the statute of limitations, but.
Of course.
So the whole show is about how Angel is trying to redeem himself for all the bad things he did as Angelus when he was a vampire without a soul, and he's helping people and he's fighting demons the whole time. So in the series finale, some of his friends die, and all of LA gets, sunken into hell. And the final scene is everyone who's left lined up, and there's a dragon coming at them. And everyone looks at him for what the new plan is, and he says, let's go to work. And then the show ends. Now, that seems like a really awful ending, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really terrible, not gonna lie.
It sounds like a cliffhanger. But here's the thing about it. This is what Joss Whedon said. The point of the show is that you're never done. No matter who goes down, the fight goes on. So that's the entire theme of the show, is it's the fight never ends. As long as you're alive, you're going to keep fighting. So they basically had to either kill him in the series finale or have that be the ending. So even though the show was canceled and they might have continued from them on, I don't know if it wasn't canceled they would have done that. I think it's a brilliant ending that you have to think about a little bit and then you get it.
Yeah.
All right.
Fair enough. I'll buy it.
Show I've never heard of. It's fine.
If Reddit wasn't internet-y enough for you, then you'll love our new segment. It's time to point out some... logic. Logic is a term to describe people who are attempting to use logic, but their reasoning is so awful that all we can do is laugh at it. We see examples of this all the time, mainly in internet comment threads, so we may pull from there a lot. But we also see it in the general culture, and we're getting it this week from people defending the government. Daniel?
Not just the government, Justin, but one official in particular, Ms. Hillary Rodham Clinton.
Is this about their marriage? Because I think that whole thing is logic, isn't it?
No. No, their marriage is, it's funny enough, but no. The revelation this week that Hillary Clinton conducted government business entirely on private email as Secretary of State has blindsided the Democratic establishment, reports the New York Times. It is a bracing reminder of the risks entailed in the party's all but all in bet on Ms. Clinton. And so basically this article interviews various Democrats who are trying very hard to defend something that appears to be indefensible, at least in terms of the law. But I think our particular example of logic this week comes from Senator Benjamin L. Cardin, who tries to defend Hillary's use of private email by saying, people have different ways of communicating. I have a granddaughter who does nothing but text. You'll never find a written letter from her. So everybody's different.
So everybody's different, so Hillary doesn't have to use official communications. She can use her own email server in Chappaqua.
Right, because, you know, his granddaughter just texts. So everybody's different. Therefore, Hillary Clinton doesn't have to follow the law.
Hey, White House communication is a judgment-free zone, okay?
Well, so just so that people understand, like, the whole point of, like, especially secretary-level communications, those have to be documented, like they have to go through like official email servers because they get recorded and they go to the Library of Congress. and because they're official communiques, even like, you know, like anything that she would do officially, official business, should be documented, especially as Secretary of State. I mean, that's a for important, you know, communication is, I mean, communication is everyone's job in the government, right? But like primarily, like this is the person who's communicating with, you know, foreign governments on behalf of the United States, right?
Yeah, we probably want those on record. We probably want to keep an account of those. And so far, none.
I have a question. Is there somebody whose job is to just go through the email archive in the Library of Congress? I mean, I'm assuming this is updated daily or weekly or monthly or something with all of the new recent emails from all these officials.
I'm not sure anyone goes through them in particular unless there's a Freedom of Information request, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I would think that wouldn't it be to the advantage of a newspaper or some sort of website publication to always have the Freedom of Information request out and just read it all? Because there's got to be stuff that people are missing. You're telling me that Bill Clinton never left any clues in his email?
So when most of these senators and House of Representative members and high-level cabinet officials, they don't – like some of them literally don't ever touch a computer. You know, they don't email. They don't text. They have staffers do these things for them. And so if you get an email from, you know, who is the Democrat here, Senator Cardin, it's probably not been typed by Senator Cardin, right? The staffer has typed it and sends it on behalf of Senator Cardin. He might check his email, but I've been around DC and I've seen that these people just, they print the emails out and they, you know, they're very old school and some of them. Now, some of them are very, the president, supposedly from reading stuff about President Obama, he's very, you know, he's got his iPhone and he's very, you know, uses a lot of the technology and like does send emails and things like that. Yeah. He's, he's probably on Tinder. He's on Instagram.
Did you say that they print the emails out?
Yes.
Usually. Come on. Yes. Even Bill Belichick uses iPads and tablets on the sideline to do plays now. Get with it, government.
Wasn't it Senator Graham today who just admitted that he had never sent an email in his life? And he's on like the House Subcommittee on Technology or something like that?
These are the people that now are in charge of the internet. These people that have never used the internet for any productive purpose are now the ones gonna help, make everything neutral.
So they just wanna make sure their child porn, is sent equally
to everyone.
Their Netflix. Yeah.
So what you're saying is Anthony Weiner should be put in charge of the net neutrality stuff.
I think that we would get more penises on the internet, and I would be, I mean, in general, that's the thing I want to encourage.
Look, all I'm trying to say about having someone read through the archives is, by getting Sony's email archives, we got Spider-Man in the Marvel comic universe. There's gotta be a reason to do it with the government. Something good will happen, right?
Or something terribly bad, right? I don't know. It seems like it could be a double-edged sword there. But I think the point here is that Senator Benjamin Cardin, Democrat of Maryland, had some terrible logic in his defense of Hillary, and it is certainly worthy of laughing at.
Let's wrap this up. What did we learn this week, Daniel?
I learned that Instagram, when I like someone's picture, what I'm really doing is attaching my male gaze to their sexuality and thus making them feel uncomfortable while simultaneously boosting their self-esteem.
William?
I learned that I must file a FCC complaint immediately due to the overabundance of males on LinkedIn. This cannot stand.
Justin, what did you learn?
I learned how much I have to improve on this podcast because Katrina Lee really classed up the joint and made me feel kind of shameful.
Kind of dirty?
No, I wouldn't go that far.
Oh.
But she sounded like an NPR host, like where I was listening to This American Life and then there's us.
It's true. She does bring a certain feminine je ne sais quoi.
Gravitas. To the program. Gravitas.
Mm-hmm. It's good. Well, if you'd like to hear more of her, or more of us, or less of us and more of her, or any combination of those words.
Except William.
All right. You're just a lowly fill-in.
I'm just a substitute, a talk pale about a, imitation.
Talk about a disposable
I'm
male.
Only half a gay.
Then if you want to hear more of us, not William, then you need to make sure you tell your friends about us, except William. You need to tell at least two friends this week. Two friends! That's all we ask about us. And if all of you do that, we'll have about 18 listeners. So you can also leave a 5-star review on iTunes. We have 9 of those. 9 perfect reviews. We'd like to keep that streak going. And, of course, like us on Facebook.com/TheMidSide. We're over 100 likes now and growing like some sort of infestation of the groin, except that you'll want us. So thanks so much. Love you guys. Bye-bye.
I'm Justin Demlesneski, and I hope you learned something this week. This concludes your journey into the midside. Good luck out there, and remember, if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day. Now, that's not true at all. You know that if you're in shape, they cancel your membership at Planet Fitness. Oh, it's judgment-free zone, man. You can't be grunting and being in shape. That's just not allowed.
I think mostly if you're a mutant who could lift the entire store simultaneously, they'd probably cancel your membership.
Okay, that will be the tag at the end of the episode now.